Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, May 29, 2014. USAID donates additional emergency funds to set up schools and hire teachers to educate children affected by the conflict in South Sudan.
There's no way that you can take away the investments in education that you give to children in ways that you might be able to destroy buildings, that you might be able to destroy houses and homes and roads.
And South Sudan's top foreign ministry officials are in Russia trying to get assurance from Russia that Russia will veto any additional sanction against South Sudan or its officials.
We need to be given the time. We need to be supported morally, financially, materially, so that we can be able first to bring peace to the people and most importantly to alleviate the current suffering that our people are in.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Officials with the United States Agency for International Development today announced a $17 million emergency education initiative in South Sudan. The money will be used to set up classrooms for 150,000 children displaced by the fighting. Mungume Debs Rakarinj has the story for VOA from Juba.
USAID Deputy Administrator for Africa, Linda Etim, says the money is targeted to assist children in six states: Jonglei, Unity, Upper Nile, Lakes, Central and Eastern Equatoria. She says the U.S. government wants to make sure young people can continue their education despite the current crisis in South Sudan.
We know that investing in children is a way of preventing violence, and we know that there's no way that you can take away the investments in education that you give to children in ways that you might be able to destroy buildings, that you might be able to destroy houses and homes and roads. If you invest in people, there is always a possibility that there's a future for a country.
The United Nations Children Fund will administer the money. A team says the funds will be used to buy teaching and learning materials and set up temporary classrooms. It will also be used to pay volunteer teachers, including Deng Gideon. He has spent the last 5 months teaching health and hygiene in a small displacement site in Juba's Konyokonyo neighborhood. There are only three classrooms for hundreds of displaced students.
Here you find very many children in a class. It can even go beyond 70 or 80 people in a class. And that one, it is really hard for a teacher or animator, you know, to teach exactly.
Gideon says he hopes the new money will be used to recruit more teachers, which South Sudan desperately needs, so they can reduce class sizes. Jonathan Vieh, the head of UNICEF in South Sudan, says that is exactly what they intend to do.
We can think about primary education and quality learning, because at the end of the day, it's not just to get children into a learning space, but to provide them with a good teacher and good material so that they actually learn something.
USAID's team says the money will be available in the coming weeks, so the program can start almost immediately. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
A delegation of South Sudan Foreign Ministry officials are visiting Moscow. A spokesman say they are encouraging the Russian government to help the country avoid further United Nations sanctions by providing a veto vote on the UN Security Council. UN Security Council envoy announced last month they would consider additional sanctions against individuals who obstruct peace in South Sudan. Philip Aleu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Foreign Affairs spokesperson Mawienma Kolari says that as Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin wraps up a five-day visit to Moscow today, he has received assurances that Russia is willing to use its veto power on the UN Security Council to block any sanctions against South Sudanese officials.
We are actually explaining to the world that instead of us being sanctioned now, will not help the effort of the peace. We need to be given the time. We need to be supported morally, financially, materially, so that we can be able first to bring peace to the people and most importantly, to alleviate the current suffering that our people are in.
Adik says he does not think reaching out to Russia will undermine South Sudan's relationship with other countries that support sanctions, including the United States. The U.S. government issued economic sanctions against the top military leader on each side of the conflict earlier this month. U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan, Susan Fage, has warned more sanctions are possible against anyone who commits human rights abuses or stands in the way of peace in South Sudan. Adik says South Sudan is not turning away from the United States, but simply reaching out to other friends.
It is not a shift. We are still working with the Western world. We are still having our relation with the United States, but we are inviting other countries to come on our help to be able to support us and respond to our needs.
Adik says it does not have to be material support. The Russian government did not contribute any money at the recent International Donors Conference in Oslo to raise funds for South Sudan's humanitarian needs. The United States was the largest donor, contributing $291 million of the more than $600 million raised.
Support cannot be only material support or money. It can also be moral support.
Adik says Maria invited Russian President Vladimir Putin to South Sudan, but does not know if Putin has accepted the offer. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
The rebels, allied to former South Sudanese Vice President Riek Machar, have welcomed the renewal of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan mandate. Opposition officials say they are happy with the presence of UN in South Sudan. For VOA News, Luti Pony has details from Nairobi.
The United Nations Security Council earlier this week unanimously adopted a resolution to extend UNMIS mandate by 6 months. The resolution also changed UNMIS focus to the immediate need of protection of civilians and ending the violence rather than peace consolidation and longer-term state and economic development. The resolution also gives UNMIS the right to protect oil installations, specifically if the government is unable to do so. In the statement today, opposition military spokesperson Lul Roy Kong says, and I quote, "We feel it is not the business of UNMIS to protect oil installations, whether the government of South Sudan is capable or not." Kong says, by stepping in to protect oil installations on behalf of the government, UNMIS will have sided with one of the parties to the conflict and inevitably become part of the problem, not solution. For its part, the South Sudan government yesterday welcomed the extension of UNMIS mandate. In addition to its peacekeeping work, UNMIS is protecting more than 75,000 civilians sheltering at 9 of its bases across the country. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
A U.S. group is training South Sudanese doctors to meet the critical shortage in medical personnel. Future Doctors for South Sudan has granted 2 scholarships so far to medical students studying in Kenya and Uganda. The group continues to seek funding for more aspiring doctors from South Sudan. Its founder has written a book about his patients who inspired him to help South Sudanese doctors and their patients. VOA fellow Nabil Biajo has this report from Washington.
Dr. Ken Waxman, founder of Future Doctors for South Sudan, is an American surgeon who has worked in the town of Gogeriel in Warab State for 4 years. He says healthcare in South Sudan is practically non-existent.
It is very much in crisis. There's just a terrible lack of South Sudanese doctors and nurses.
Back in 2010, Dr. Waxman was working with Doctors Without Borders in Gogeriel and helped set up a clinic there just before South Sudan's independence vote.
And ended up being a very busy clinic. I believe it's still functioning even now while a number of other facilities have closed. It's operated by Doctors Without Borders.
Dr. Waxman personalizes the problems with South Sudan's health system by following the stories of individual patients and writing about them. His new book, Ajax Song, was inspired by the story of a young South Sudanese girl brought to hospital who was suffering from a snake bite on her leg. Waxman helped save her leg.
I was just so inspired by her courage and her positive attitude and the support of her family and her community.
While in Gogeriel, Dr. Waxman met Malueth Angwe, a young surgical assistant who aspired to be a medical doctor. Dr. Waxman decided to help him get into medical school, which led to Dr. Waxman establishing Future Doctors for South Sudan.
As we worked together for 3 months, I was just so impressed with how intelligent and motivated and patriotic he was.
Malweth Angwe is now in Kampala studying at St. Augustine International University. He describes his experience as exciting, but he says working to become a qualified doctor is not easy.
I have to study so hard that I acquire the talents and skills required of a doctor.
Mangwe says he's determined to go back to save lives in his home village of Gogriel and other villages in South Sudan.
The main reason why I'm in medical school is to go back and help serve my country. Currently, there are very few doctors back in South Sudan. And upon my graduation, I plan to go back home and work with the medical doctors in South Sudan in the rural parts of the country that have very few doctors anyway.
Future Doctors for South Sudan is based in California, where Dr. Waxman resides, but he often travels back to South Sudan. The website is www.futuredoctors.org. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Drinking fluids during hot weather is important for your health. It's best to drink clean water, milk, or fruit juice to avoid dehydration. Drinking alcohol will not help you and can cause problems. Consuming a lot of beer, wine, or other alcoholic beverages can leave a person dehydrated, confused, and susceptible to injury. The signs of dehydration are dry lips and tongue, headache, or even dizziness. If fluids aren't replaced quickly, heat stroke or even heart problems can follow. So make sure you drink a lot of fluids, especially clean water.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, cases of cholera continue to skyrocket in South Sudan. Stay tuned.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com.
southsudan@voanews.com.
We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan.
www.voanews.com/South Sudan.
Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should men help cook meals for their families?
Yes, they should, just in case of an accident.
I can answer that in the level of our culture. Yes. It's totally no.
Why not? I think it's a nice thing. We're already in developed countries, and I think most of us are already civilized. So that aspect of traditions, it will be best if men can also, why not also to do the same and copy cooking, like help in sometimes cook, maybe wash utensils, so that it will make also their wives happy.
I don't want to put it like they should, but let it be just volunteer.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The number of people infected by cholera in Juba town is increasing every day. A doctor with the International Humanitarian Aid Agency, MEDAIR, says they have documented hundreds of cases, mostly from Munuki and Gumbo suburbs. Trina Helderman says there are no vaccines in South Sudan to help stop the spread of the disease, but her group and other agencies are involved in community awareness campaign to prevent cholera from spreading to other parts of the city.
As of the 27th, the situation report was reporting 800 cases, but I believe now we've moved up to around 900 cases in Juba, and that's cumulative.
Which places are affected in Juba? I mean, which suburbs or which areas are mostly affected?
There's two areas. Initially, most of the cases were coming from an area of town called Manuki, and now since Sunday, we've been seeing a lot of cases from an area called Gumbo, which is on the opposite side of town and actually just across the Nile. So it's a completely different section of town.
What are the preventive efforts that you and the other organizations are doing to stop this spreading to the other parts of the town?
There's a massive social mobilization and house-to-house promotion campaign going on where we have trained several hundred household promoters to go and provide messaging about hand-washing, drinking clean water. They're doing distributions of AquaTabs and Pure, which are two chlorine-based methods for cleaning your drinking water to make it safe for drinking. And they're also distributing ORS sachets, the oral rehydration salts, to households to ensure that if someone does get sick at the house, that they have something that they can take on their way to the hospital.
How about vaccines? We understand that there are some vaccines that can prevent somebody from contracting the disease. Are these vaccines available in South Sudan?
Currently, there are no more vaccines available in South Sudan. There is actually a stockpile for the world. There's only about 350,000 doses left in the entire world currently. And we had done several vaccination campaigns previously before the outbreak started for some of the IDP camps that exist in Juba and in different places in South Sudan because we felt the risk of an outbreak was very high. The vaccine takes at least 3 weeks to start working, and because there is such a low supply globally, currently there aren't any further vaccination campaigns taking place in Juba.
And with this situation going on like this, what is going to happen?
Well, I think we're all waiting to see exactly how things will happen. The last cholera outbreak in Juba, I believe, was either in 2007, 2009. We have data from 2007, and it shows that the cholera outbreak lasted actually about 20 weeks. So that's, you know, almost a third of the year the outbreak continued. But that was at a time when there were only 50,000 people in Juba, and now there are 500,000 people. So we're trying to monitor the attack rates and also the caseloads to try and determine how long this outbreak could last, knowing that our efforts to try to prevent it with water and sanitation type activities and household promotion may be limited simply because of the size of Juba and the very poor baseline water and sanitation infrastructure here.
And what is the death toll as of today?
The death toll, from what I know, is currently 27. The case fatality rate, I believe, is around 3.4%.
Dr. Trina Hildeman works with MedAir, an international aid agency operating in South Sudan. She was speaking to me from Juba this past hour. An oral vaccine for cholera has proven to be highly effective and could change the way future outbreaks are controlled, including the outbreak in South Sudan. Medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, says the vaccine was used during a 2012 outbreak in Guinea. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The study of the oral cholera vaccine, known as Shankol, was conducted by Epicentra, the research arm of Doctors Without Borders. Rebecca Grace is director of epidemiology.
I think what's interesting and what this study adds and that hasn't been shown up until now is the possibility to include oral cholera vaccine into the arsenal of the epidemic response to cholera. This is the first time that the vaccine was used in sub-Saharan Africa in response to an epidemic.
Grace says the findings are published in the New England Journal of Medicine and dispel a number of myths about cholera control.
There was a fear that use of the vaccine would pull resources away from treatment, would be too logistically complicated, and would potentially not necessarily have an impact. And what we've seen through this study is that it's effective in terms of protecting individuals in response to an epidemic, but also feasible and did not pull away resources.
The vaccine is administered in two doses, spaced 14 days apart. it had an 86% protection rate in Guinea. More than 316,000 doses were administered over a six-week period. Grace says one advantage of an oral vaccine is that it can be administered by non-medical personnel, as opposed to an injection.
Second of all, what we're hoping to do in South Sudan and what we did do in Guinea is use the vaccine as a part of the response to help bring down the caseload, reduce the number of cases, and try and bring a halt to the spread of the epidemic in that environment. And so it does add a new component in terms of response to outbreaks.
In South Sudan, there's concern about cholera spreading further among those crowded in camps for the displaced. Shankol was not used in the major outbreaks in Haiti in 2011 or Zimbabwe in 2008-2009. There were thousands of deaths in those outbreaks.
The course of those two epidemics may have been very different had the vaccine been used.
But why wasn't it used in Haiti and Zimbabwe?
Like any type of intervention in medicine or in public health, which is until it's been used, the discussion is extremely difficult to have until there's proof that this added intervention is positive with respect to controlling the epidemic. It makes the debate very, very difficult because there's nothing with which to center around or to discuss.
The World Health Organization is now stockpiling Shankol, one of two oral cholera vaccines. It's pre-qualified for use. The study says Shankol is better to use in developing countries because it's cheaper and easier to manufacture, transport, and store. Cholera is a waterborne disease causing severe diarrhea. It's usually found in countries with poor sanitation and unsafe drinking water. The disease is usually treated with oral rehydration therapy. The MSF Vaccination Project Manager in Guinea says it is possible to vaccinate hundreds of thousands of people in a remote area with a highly mobile population and in a relatively short period of time. The group is a major buyer of oral cholera vaccines. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
As South Sudan struggles to overcome a cholera outbreak, the World Health Organization says Ebola continues to spread in West Africa as the first cases of this deadly disease are confirmed in Sierra Leone. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization warns the Ebola outbreak is spreading because many people do not understand how the virus is transmitted from one person to another. A scientist with the WHO's Control of Epidemic Diseases, Pierre Fromenti, saw an example of this in a remote village in Sierra Leone. He says earlier this week, relatives of several Ebola patients removed them from a health facility in the town of Kwandu and took them home, despite protests from medical staff. He tells VOA the consequences of this action are now being seen.
Of course, by doing that, they expose themselves. They exposed the village. They have been, since this happened on Monday evening, late. By being that, of course, they exposed themselves, again, by being very close to patients suspected to be Ebola. Some of them are confirmed already. And we heard that one of them died already in the village.
Dr. Fromenti says he does not believe the disease will spread beyond the villages where the patients were taken because they are all very sick and are not able to move around. But he says it is critical people understand the disease is transmitted by close contact with infected patients, and this should be avoided. Periodic Ebola epidemics have hit Central Africa since 1976. But the current outbreak, which was first identified in Guinea in February, is the first to erupt in West Africa. The latest WHO figures put the number of confirmed and suspected cases of the disease in Guinea at 280, including 103 deaths. In Liberia, there are 12 confirmed and suspected cases and 9 deaths. The number of confirmed cases in Sierra Leone is 7, with at least 2 and as many as 5 deaths.
Je pense que le fait que c'est la première fois que ça arrive en Afrique de l'Ouest joue contre nous parce que les gens comprennent pas.
Dr. Fromenti says the fact this is West Africa's first outbreak of Ebola is working against containment of the disease. He says people do not understand the course of the disease or how to treat it. He says it is of utmost urgency this information be conveyed to all. He says teams of experts are being sent to Guinea and Sierra Leone to address villagers' resistance to changing their behavior so they can protect themselves and others from becoming infected with Ebola. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine have shot down a Ukrainian military helicopter, killing 14 government troops, including a general. Acting President Oleksandr Cherchnyov told Parliament today that terrorists used a shoulder-launched missile to down the helicopter near the separatist-held city of Slovyansk. Earlier today, a separatist leader said his group was holding four European observers who have been missing since late Monday. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan says his government will continue to do, in his words, everything possible to bring home more than 200 schoolgirls who were kidnapped by Boko Haram last month. In a recorded speech released today, Mr. Jonathan noted it had been 45 days since, in his words, the horrifying abduction took place. The president said his government was open to dialogue with citizens who had backed al-Qaeda or other similar groups if they renounced terrorism. And finally, Muslim rebels have killed at least 11 people seeking refuge in a church in the capital of the Central African Republic. Witnesses to yesterday's attack in Bangui say as many as 30 people were killed. They say Muslim gunmen threw grenades and fired bullets into the church compound. It was the worst attack blamed on Muslims since Seleka rebels were ousted from power in January. Chaos and violence has run rampant in CAR since Seleka rebels seized power last year. They began looting and killing Christians who formed a militia that launched reprisals against Muslim civilians. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Joe Gero by Freedom Boys.
You're our people. You got to listen to this drug and take the meaning. We are the boys in the land. Take the better choice for your freedom. This is the last chance. And people, oh, I got to look at the gata Zulu. To be, oh, someone that can it be a summa pop, the better appear. I'm a poro, he's on your. I, to be, I get it. Time in Shilu, the girl who feed you, so what that will feed you up, Mario. Obviously, listen, be killing girls who done the killing against him.
We have been listening to the Freedom Boys with that song, Joe Gero. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be with us. Please join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Like in Lisa, in a binding, get you.